Welcome to episode 287 of After the Credits. I am your co-host, Brain Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Colleen, God Empress of the Multiverse, bow before me. Dale?
Dale, bowing before Colleen, God Empress of the Universe.
As one should.
And I was going to say, and I am bowing, though you cannot see it. I bow to you, O Master of the Universe. So how you guys holding up?
I'm okay. I'm adequate.
I'm ready for a break. I am so ready.
Like a break from work?
Break
from life.
I am taking a vacation next week, and I am visiting my brother in Lac Lejeune.
Ooh, Lac Lejeune. Ooh. Very nice. Hopefully
very, very automatically social distanced, for sure.
Oh, well, good for you. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. From the photos, it looks like he has like a really nice place and it's kind of secluded. So, you know, sit on the deck with trees and a lake. Sounds like good to me.
Have you not been there before?
No. He's only been there for 6 or 8 months.
It's a recent move.
Okay. Yeah, very recent. I was about to go up there and then the COVID thing happened and at this point I know like they basically only talk to their neighbors and I've been like isolated here, so
yeah,
you know, everybody's safe
as much as you can. Yeah
Well, that sounds like a fun trip.
So looking forward to it.
It'll be nice to get away for sure.
I need a vacation.
Yes, you do, Colleen. Miss, I work 7 days a week.
The last 2 weeks have been almost nonstop water testing for Leanie.
Ooh.
And water testing is, it's emotionally draining because it never seems to be done. And it's one of those things where you do the same thing over and over again and hope for different results. And you're just hitting your head against the wall. And then one day we had, 37 stacks. We were shorthanded, so it was a brand new green guy on the roof filling pipes. And then I'm the only other person, and I have 4 floors to basically check on every single pipe as they're filling. So that was just by the numbers of just doing that, like over 150 flights running up and down kind of thing. But I think it's probably closer to 200th when I start figuring in a bunch of other stuff. I'm just, my brain, stop now. Stop. It's not functioning right.
Aww.
Plumbing has damaged my brain.
That sucks.
Yeah. And I also did a Are You on the Autistic Scale self-test from BC Autism, and apparently I'm 39 out of 50.
Oh, really?
It does not surprise me at all. Yeah.
Wow.
Although some of it, I think, is just me being introverted and misanthropic. But
which could be, which could be misread, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm thinking there was a few questions going, no, this is just me hating humans. this isn't me avoiding them because they make me uncomfortable. I literally just dislike the human race. I'm a misanthrope. I'll admit it. I like individuals. I don't like them as a collective.
Nice. She is not going to kill anybody, we promise. I shouldn't say that.
No, don't. Promises.
Not unless provoked.
Yeah, that's there. That's the quantifier. I like
Don't write checks I can't cash.
I shouldn't write those for sure. On your behalf, at least.
Excellent.
So should we talk about some stuff that we've been consuming as far as media is concerned?
Sure. I think we should.
where shall we start? I have to forewarn you, it's been a very productive couple of weeks because I think we're maybe like a week late. So I've been very busy watching stuff.
That makes up for my lack of doing stuff from being in comas.
I need to warn you, I actually watched musicals.
Oh. Does that mean you're going to break into song randomly?
Oh, God, no. Nobody wants that. Nobody.
Oh. Little Shop of Horrors? Like, born to be a dentist? Because I have a knack for causing pain? Come on. There's good stuff out there.
So where should we start? Should we start with some TVs or some movies? TVs. TV or some movies. Sorry.
TVs. I have one thing on my list. Modern Family, the complete 10 seasons, has been dropped onto Netflix. I have never watched a single episode, so I'm basically just finished season one as like background noise, and I still like Al Bundy. That's about all I have to say for it. And I like the dapper Latino kid, Manny? Manny, I think, yeah. He's like
I've never watched the show, so I have no idea. All I know is that Al Bundy is in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Once again, he is literally the best part of
Sofia Vergara, because she's Sofia Vergara.
Well, yeah. Yeah. The interplay between them.
Yeah. I forget the act.
Go ahead, Del.
I forget the actor's name, but I generally like the roles he's in.
I was gonna say that the hot Latina mom is very much alive and well, and my mom, not being fully Latina but being Portuguese, which is very close, sometimes looks like that.
Oh,
yeah, she wore high heels well into her 50s, like it's crazy. Who does that? I don't.
Oh, check out One Day at a Time.
Oh, oh yeah, dude. Puerto Rican. Yeah, that was a good show. Is it still on? Like, I remember watching the first season, but...
It moved to from Netflix to a network called Pop.
Oh, maybe that's why.
And I don't know where you get that in Canada.
Yeah. I liked it. It was good.
Mr. Dale,
that's it for me.
Any TV for you?
TV? Well... Yes, but not as much. Like, most of the shows that I've been watching have kind of wrapped up, and there haven't been a lot of new stuff. But so Legends of Tomorrow season 5 wrapped up, and I maybe didn't enjoy it as much as the other seasons, but it was still pretty damn good. And the last part of the season was insanely off the hook. It was kind of fun. I mean, just the batshit crazy. They were doing... like a combination Star Trek, Mr. Rogers, period costume drama mashup in the middle of this thing. It was just crazy, but a lot of fun. So still thumbs up for Legends. Space Force, I took a crack at, and generally I'm not into that style of humor, but around episode 3, John Malkovich made the whole series really watchable. Like, he was just fantastic in that.
Really?
Dan and I really, really like the show. I've never watched any of The Office or Parks and Rec, so I'm not familiar with Greg Daniels' other work, but we thought we'd give this one a go, and that was kind of on board from the start. We really enjoyed it.
The first episode. And then turned it off.
Yeah. I almost didn't keep going. I think if there was other stuff I wanted to watch, I might not have. But no, it was hit and miss. Like, there were moments where I loved it and other moments where I was actually fast forwarding a little bit because it was just like, this style of humor is really hit and miss for me. But all the moments that John Malkovich was interacting with Steve Carell, I love those.
And he really does kill it in the show.
Yeah.
It's great. He makes it.
The only part of the first episode I actually liked was when Steve Carell, I need a minute, I need a minute, and then starts dancing to the Beach Boys song.
Yes.
Like, come on. Yeah. I found that funny, yet at the same time, I don't need to watch any more of this.
Yeah.
I really like the ending. I thought it worked.
Oh, that ending was crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Definitely a cliffhanger for season two.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
And lastly, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back, season seven. And I think this is their last season, I'm pretty sure. They're off to a good start. I really enjoyed the setup they had for this particular season's story arc. And I swear to God, they are setting a record for the number of different ways they can resurrect a single character from death. Like,
oh, that's funny. So
Coulson, Coulson has died, I think, three. Well, they kind of brought him back three times. Which is just kind of crazy. But anyway, yeah, no, I have enjoyed the season start, which I can't always say I have. So hopefully they'll kill it for their last season.
I'm curious, do they kill him off and then bring him back because of ratings, or did they kill him off and bring him back because that was intended?
I don't know. I mean, of course, like, he died in the movie, right? So they had to resurrect him to actually start the series with
the
him.
Show. Yes.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure if, you know, it was, is this written into the script, or do they just kind of bring him back when the ratings are taking a dip because everybody likes him? Like, I don't know.
He basically hasn't missed a show, so they've definitely.
Oh, yeah. It's written in. Yeah.
It's probably all written in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although maybe for this season, maybe they intended to kill him and do something different and then decided it was like, I don't know. I don't fan out that much to get the deep background, but
yeah, no, I'm with you there. I got some stuff, most of it's streaming. So I've been keeping Netflix active, very active. I watched Trial by Media. I think I actually finished watching this just before we recorded the last show, and I'd forgotten to mention it. So I thought I'd mention it now because it's actually quite good. So it's a 6-episode docu-series, with each episode being about like one case. And it's all about cases that were basically either affected or sort of played out in the media and how the media played a role in them. Really, really interesting, totally worth watching. And surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly, but an interesting factoid, executive produced by George Clooney, which I thought was really fun. Don't know why, but it was just interesting to see his name pop up. And that's on Netflix. Defending Jacob, which is the Chris Evans vehicle on Apple TV. They were releasing it one episode a week on, I think, Thursdays. So it certainly kept Dan and I going back week after week to watch the show. So, hey, that actually works. So it played out just like a regular cable TV show. Based on a book by William Landry about a kid who was put on trial for the murder of another kid he goes to school with. And Chris Evans and Michelle Dougherty of Downton Abbey, they play the parents of this young man, and it just plays out over a period. I think it's eight or nine episodes. You basically see the trial happen and what the family's going through. And it's really, really well done. It's directed by Morton Tilden, who did Headhunters and The Imitation Game. So it looks really good, and it really does carry well through the whole series. And Chris Evans is great. So I really enjoyed it. We thought it was quite good, and Dan and I both really, really liked this one. And that's on Apple TV. We watched the full 5 episodes of Cursed Films on Shudder. This is Jay Cheels of the Film Junk podcast, a throwback to the good old days of podcasting when we were on maybe episode, 50? I don't even remember. It's been so long. But yeah, so Jay did this series of 5 episodes. They're about 30 minutes each. It's a documentary series about basically movie sets that have been said to be cursed. So there's some interesting stuff there. I don't think there's anything particularly new in any of the episodes. All of the stories have been floating around for a long time. So I didn't see anything new, but there was some interesting footage, and there were some really great interviews with various people. And overall, I thought it was really well done. And I really like his style of documentary filmmaking. So I'd highly recommend that. It's really good. People have maybe not complained, but have had warnings about the final episode, which is the one on the Twilight Zone movie, because there's actually footage of the accident, which is pretty brutal. Crash? Yeah, yeah. And I guess that maybe hasn't been floating around very much, so it's kind of a big deal. It happened. So, I mean, everybody knows that this happened. So I didn't think it was super shocking, but some people have said, I didn't need to see that. So just be forewarned, there is real footage of the accident, and it can be kind of brutal. Just saying. The Great. This is on Amazon Prime. It's written and created by Tony McNamara, who was one of the co-writers on The Favorite a couple of years ago. So you can kind of get a sense right off the bat what this might be like. It stars Elle Fanning and Nicholas Holt, and it's about basically Catherine the Great before she was Catherine the Great. And it's quite good, but it has a very modern sensibility, and it's kind of dirty and gross and kind of funny, very, I don't know what the right word is. It's just not your typical period drama, which is one of the reasons I really, really like it.
Did they make Peter the Great's mistress like completely disturbingly just gross?
No.
I'm out of curiosity on that.
No. And I'm not familiar with the history, but he certainly has numerous mistresses, but his favorite mistress, it's not just the mistress that he's into. It's also her husband. So they kind of have more than once there were hints at ménage à trois. It's not the show is very graphic in some instances, and in others it's still like as graphic as it is, you don't actually get like a lot of sex. It's really, really well made, and of course really lush and beautiful, and you know, everybody looks amazing, but it is also has like this undercurrent of just dirtiness and grime, which I really, really like. It's nice. Really good. I highly recommend it. I binge watched all 10 episodes in a period of like 2 or 3 days. It's highly recommended in my books. Unorthodox on Netflix. This is the 4-part series starring Shira Haas as a ultra-Orthodox Jewish woman from Williamsburg, New York, who basically like runs away from her family and to Germany to find her mother, who had also run away years before. And it's just really interesting. It's a really fascinating look at a culture and a community that I'm not that familiar with. And Haas is like super, super talented actress. She's hard to look away from. It's a really, really good show and sometimes really, really difficult to watch. So I highly, highly recommend it. The Trials of Gabriel Fernandez. I went through my watch list, guys. I'm sorry. This is a investigative docuseries about the death of a 8-year-old boy at the hand of his mother and her boyfriend. And that's, you know, depressing enough as it is, but the show is actually more about how the Child Protective Services in the U.S. failed the family, and not just this family, but a number of other children. It's really sad. It's kind of gross because it really makes you wonder, like, it's hard to believe that there are people like this and that there are kids that are suffering this badly and that the government knows about it and isn't doing anything about it, even though that's their mandate. So it really gets at some really interesting things about just the service that they're supposed to be providing. And it just made me wonder just how bad are we doing as well. I mean, you hear horror stories about kids that, you know, aren't being taken care of. And it just makes you wonder that if it's happening in the States, it's happening everywhere. And I'm sure it's happening here too.
Oh, you want some disturbing stuff? Start looking into the sweep in Canada, where they just randomly took native children from their parents and then like adopted them all over the world.
Yep. There's a really, really great podcast on that. I'll dig it up.
Finding Amy or something? Or?
Yeah, I think that that's the one.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I'd listened to that, but I was talking to my coworker and he's like going, yeah, I just got my settlement. I'm like going, what? It's like going, I was part of the swoop. He received $21,000. It's the first payment and because he was stolen from his parents. I'm like going, Jesus Christ. It just seems so like, so I live in my ideal sort of bubble. And mm-hmm. I, even though I vaguely knew what was going on, it didn't even occur to me someone I knew
could have been affected by it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was just like blown away.
Yeah. It's pretty sad. Dan was watching this and I'm like, well, you know, I'm not doing anything else. Why don't I watch this with him? And I have to admit, like three episodes in, I was like, okay, not only am I so into this show, I may have to start getting up at some ungodly hour to watch the races with you. So he was watching Formula One, the Netflix TV series, which is now in its second season. And as with season one, this season followed basically the race, the F1 race, the F1 season, race by race. Through a number of drivers and teams. And it's a 30 minutes episodes behind the scenes of what's going on and the drama that's unfolding throughout the sport. And it's really, really fun to watch. And it's really fast. And the cars are amazing. And I've always kind of liked F1, but I've never been like a super fan. But I think this show has made me one. Sorry, honey. You may have been dethroned. The one thing that is really like glaringly obvious from like the first 10 minutes of an episode, and I'm sure you, like, you don't even need to be a fan or watch the sport to know this. It's very white, it's very European, and it's like a rich person's sport. It's not the kind of thing that, you know, just anybody can do. It takes a lot of money and effort. And that's not to say that there aren't people that are not from well-to-do means that make it through, but it's very rare. So yeah, it's an interesting look at a very, very elite sport that only a few people, you know, are in. And it's funny because as you watch the episodes, you start to realize that everybody knows everyone and they've all worked together for, you know, since they were six.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. But I mean, if you're into the sport, it's totally worth watching. It certainly got me way more interested in it than I was before. So I'd say it's done its job. Good selling, cool. Good marketing feature for F1 for sure.
Cool, cool, cool.
And then I just have a few more. Little Fires Everywhere, which is on Amazon Prime. This is based on Celeste Ng's novel of the same title, which I read just recently. So I was really curious to see the show. It's eight episodes. Half of the episodes were directed by Lynn Shelton, who just passed away. So it has a very distinct sensibility about it, mostly because she sets the tone for so much of the series. And it stars Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington as two mothers. One of them, you can guess which one, is like the well-to-do woman with the big family. And then Kerry Washington plays an artist who's a bit of a transient, who has a daughter, and she ends up in Shaker Heights, and all kinds of things happen. I didn't love the show. I really, really liked the book, but I didn't like the show as much as I enjoyed the book, but it was still really worth watching. And the performances from Kerry Washington, who seems to cry a lot in the series, which I, for some reason, didn't really, I don't know. I didn't expect that from reading the novel. So it felt a bit weird. But both she and Reese Witherspoon are really good. And Joshua Jackson is in it and has a great cast of characters. It's a good ensemble cast. So I'd say it's worth checking out. It's pretty great. And last, but probably not least, Mrs. America. This is on FX, just wrapped. And it's, I think, also available on Hulu. This was created by Davi Waller, who I didn't realize is Canadian. So kudos to her. She's a pretty great TV writer. She used to write on Mad Men, and then she was one of the main writers on Halt and Catch Fire, which was like an amazing show. So that's good by me. And it's the story of the Equal Rights Amendment that sort of started taking shape in the 70s. Right through the 1970s, it kind of starts at the beginning of the ERA, right through to the end, basically to Reagan getting elected. But it tells the story from the point of view mostly of this woman named Phyllis Schlafly, who was like a right-wing conservative.
I remember her from the news.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting approach to the story, and it's not just from her perspective. It does jump back and forth from both sides, and there are other women that become involved, but it's mostly from her perspective. And it's a really just a fascinating look at, you know, the ERA and the struggle to get the Equal Rights Amendment passed, and how it took like 40 years to pass it, because there are some states that have just ratified in the last couple of years, which is shocking to me. And it's a stunning cast of characters. Like, you have Cate Blanchett, who plays the title role. Rose Byrne plays Gloria Steinem. Like, Uzu Abuda is in it. Elizabeth Banks. Like, basically everybody that's anybody is in the show. And it's quite good. I really, really enjoyed it. And so I forced Dan to watch it. And he really liked it as well. But, I mean, it's kind of hard to look away from Cate Blanchett. She's kind of amazing, but I'd really recommend it. I really, really enjoyed the show, and it was a good bit of a history lesson for sure. And I'll stop talking for a bit.
Okay.
That's a lot of TV.
It is a lot of TV. Mind you, I mean, some of it is stuff that was kind of ongoing that we've been watching week by week, so it's not really new.
Right.
But yeah, some of the stuff was Marina just binge-watching stuff as I did other work.
It's all good. I have a book.
Do we have movies before we go to books?
Okay, I don't have movies. Dale?
I have movies. Yep.
Yay!
Lucky Grandma, which Marina twigged me into. I wouldn't have watched this if you hadn't recommended it. It took me like 20 minutes to get into the style of the show. It was so different from kind of what I normally watch in movies, but it was definitely worth it. What a batshit crazy story in a good way.
Right? Oh, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I thought when I was watching it, I'm like, I think Dale's going to like this.
For people that take it on, it really has a different kind of aesthetic to it. It's not like, a lot of the movies I watch anyway. It might be different for other people, but I just started to kind of fall in love with this cranky grandma character who I couldn't tell if she was just like an evil bitch or good-hearted, like, woman that was just a bit cranky or what. But yeah, it had some really fun moments in it. So
I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, overall I enjoyed it. I forget how you described it, but it for me it was worth a watch.
Yay.
I caught up on some mainstream stuff. I watched Emma. I enjoyed it once I got used to Anya Taylor-Joy. Like, she just kind of wasn't doing it for me at first, but I kind of settled into it. So I'm no expert on Jane Austen films, but I enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I wasn't as keen on it. I thought it was okay, but I didn't love it.
Yeah.
I came home and watched Pride and Prejudice, so
fake it. Yeah.
I think it just didn't hit some of the buttons for me that I usually like, but it's not to say that it's not a well-made movie, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely like Pride and Prejudice. With that. That's the one with...
I like the Keira Knightley one.
Yes.
Just for time constraints. Like, I love the miniseries, but it is a big time investment. So when I need my Jane Austen fill, I usually put in the Joe Wright, Keira Knightley one. Because, yeah, it's quick.
Yeah. Ford versus Ferrari. I really liked it. It was so much better than I expected. And for all the racing footage, it didn't get boring, which surprised me. Like, it was really tied into the theme of the story. So I was like, wow, this is really well done. So
I'm so glad you enjoyed that one too. I was a big fan of this for sure.
I highly recommend it for anybody. Like, the story is associated with the racing, but it's really about two very different people coming together to achieve something like really remarkable. And it was really well done in my books.
Yay.
The rhythm section, which I had the same reaction that you did, Marina. It was like, this is kind of okay. Like, I was rooting for it to be better. Like, it was really weird. It kind of wasn't catching, and it was like, but I really want it to. And it never really did.
I should clarify that I haven't actually seen the movie yet. I read the book.
I thought you did.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen the movie yet.
Oh, okay. So you were talking about the book then. Yeah, no, for Jude Law and Blake Lively. I mean, Blake Lively maybe doesn't have a lot of range, but Jude Law, it just something didn't quite click. And I was kind of disappointed. I would almost like to see it get a second chance, but I don't think it will.
Yeah.
The Warrior Queen of Jansey, which is about British Indian Tea Company, British India Tea Company, I think.
I remember this trailer.
It's I really enjoyed it. It's about I should have written this down, but a particular time in Indian history where the company was basically starting to kind of, in shitty ways, annex the kingdoms that they had had agreements with. And there was pushback, rebellion. And this is about this particular region, Jansey. And it just so happened that the queen was the one that took up arms. And it's based on a true story. I'm not entirely sure how accurate it is, but I think in terms of kind of theme, it is. And it's also female written and directed. And so it had a really different sense to it about the rebellion. Like, it wasn't about the fighting. There was fighting, but it was really about kind of the spirit of the people and the queen and the dynamics of the British Empire at the time. So some quibbles. It wore its heart on its sleeve a little bit too much for my taste in some places, but I quite enjoyed it.
Oh, I have to put this on my watch list. Thanks for the heads up.
And Bad Boys for Life. This one was just like you said. I hope I'm remembering correctly this time, but it was a fun popcorn movie. It had potential to go beyond that, but it didn't. So,
agreed. 100%.
And last but not least, the musicals, plural. I hadn't seen it. I was looking for stuff to watch, and I thought, I'm finally going to watch Footloose, which came out in 1984.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd never seen Footloose before.
Okay.
And yeah, it's just good fun. Actually, I was a bit impressed with it actually survives really well in terms of some of the gender issues and other stuff in there. And in terms of the way this story concluded, I actually have a lot of respect for it. Like, it was a rebellious teenager thing, but it ended in a way that I didn't quite expect. And I enjoyed that. And it was just a hoot seeing a very, very, very young Kevin Bacon.
Yes.
Sarah Jessica Parker Diane Wiest and John Lithgow. Like, oh my God, they are so young.
Yeah, everybody. And you know, it's funny you say that, but I saw Footloose for the first time maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And every once in a while when it's on TV, which happens to be quite often, at least recently, whenever it's on, we always watch a little bit of it because it's one of these musicals. Like, it's a musical, but it's like the musical that Dan actually likes. It's really bizarre. And it's good. I really like it. It's really, really well done. There's actually a really interesting, like, the series as a whole is not particularly interesting, but Netflix has a series called The Movies That Made Us or something like that. I'll see if I can dig up the link. And they basically pick a bunch of like popular movies and they do like cast interviews and whatever else. And the making of Footloose was really interesting, mostly because I didn't know any of it. Or am I thinking of Dirty Dancing? Oh shit. Now I might've talked myself into a corner. I might've been Dirty Dancing. But either way, Footloose is great.
It had its own series recently out.
Footloose?
No, Dirty Dancing.
Oh, Dirty. Yes, it did.
Yeah. They Not that I back. Know much. I just remember, why.
But no Patrick Swayze, so, you know, just True. Doesn't work without it.
Yeah, I enjoyed Dirty Dancing too. But yeah, Footloose, definitely I shouldn't have waited so long. It was fun. And the final one, drum roll, Yellow Submarine.
Oh, that thing is so crazy.
Condolences.
It's, it is a film with the Beatles. It's basically a cartoon that's a venue just to play Beatles songs, and it's kind of an acid trip.
It's the Blue Meanies.
Hello, Glove.
The boobie?
No. Yes, no, we don't say that in Grumpy Land. It's been 30 years and I don't ever need to see it again.
It came out in 1968. Yeah, I saw it as a kid and I just thought, oh, what's this going to be like as an adult? Because as a kid, I loved it. As an adult, I was like, I'm not intoxicated enough, but I'm enjoying the Beatles songs.
Yeah, maybe if I was super high.
It would be a different experience. I was curious, so I checked what on Wikipedia what kind of ratings it got, and it was actually, I think, the most popular of the four Beatles movies that came out, and it got really good reviews from reviewers and audience.
Wow.
So there you go. If you're looking for like something completely different and maybe, you know, you're a little bit high, you can take this and see what it does for you. And that's my movies.
I love it. I love it. Love it. I have a few, not as many as TV, I promise. We watched Capone, the Josh Trank, Tom Hardy movie about Al Capone, the last years of Al Capone's life. It's weird. It's very esoteric. They're certainly going for something very like drama with a capital D highbrow. And it mostly doesn't work. I mean, Tom Hardy is really good in general. So he's really captivating here as well, but the movie's just kind of a mess. I didn't really care for it, but Linda Cardellini is really good in it. And so is Matt Dillon, and he doesn't really show up in stuff very often. So I thought it was worth mentioning because he is pretty good here, but the movie overall is just doesn't really work. So now that's, I think, two fails for Josh Trank. I don't know if this means he's now in director jail, but maybe it's a sign that maybe he needs director jail for a little while. Just saying.
Definitely on notice.
Yeah, definitely on notice. That's right. A Million Little Pieces, Sam Taylor Johnson's adaptation of the infamous, I guess is the word, James Frey, quote unquote, biography, which turned out not to be a biography. What a mess that was. But Aaron Taylor Johnson stars. It's for those that don't know the story, he's basically drug addicted, alcoholic, basically dead, should be dead, manages to be alive. Somebody puts him on a plane and sends him to rehab for like the umpteenth time. And this time it's going to stick, hopefully. Billy Bob Thornton also stars, as does Juliette Lewis. The movie is good. Like, it's solid. The story still has a lot of baggage. I can't help but remember the original stuff that went along when the book came out. But overall, I really liked the movie, and Taylor Johnson is just a really great director. So the movie is quite good. The Vast of Night. Oh, and that's streaming on Amazon Prime for anybody that wants to see it. The Vast of Night, Andrew Patterson's feature film debut. This had a lot of buzz going into it. It premiered at, I want to say it was South by Southwest, or maybe it was Sundance. I don't remember what festival it was. It's a very, very low budget, I guess, sci-fi movie set in the 1950s, New Mexico. And it's about a radio DJ and a young woman who are basically running around town one night as there are calls coming in and maybe possibly an alien spaceship hovering over the small town. It's super interesting, really well made. Dan loved it. I thought it was great. A thumbs up from us. It's worth checking out for sure. And that's also streaming on Amazon Prime. Becky, Jonathan Mallows, and Carrie Mernion's new film. They did Bushwick a couple of years ago, which I really liked. So I was kind of looking forward to this one. And let's be honest, Kevin James as a bad guy certainly has its own appeal, especially in my current new appreciation of Kevin James. This is pretty decent. Lulu Wilson is really the standout here. So the movie is basically like a ultra-violent Home Alone. The young daughter and Joel McHale plays her father. They go to like their cabin in the woods, and nearby a bunch of convicts have escaped from a bus. And they've come to the house to look for something, and she gets angry and shit happens. There is lots of blood. It's good. It's, you know, in this case, it's kids killing adults, which is an interesting turn of events. But I enjoyed it, mostly because Lulu Wilson is really, really awesome. And you know what? Kevin James isn't bad. He's not so bad. So that's Becky. Okay, Colleen, this one's for you.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. Blood Machines. This thing is freaking insane. So it's, I think it was kickstarted. It is 50 minutes long, so it's not quite a feature. It kind of plays like an extended music video for Carpenter Brut, which is like this really hardcore electro dance French duo, I think they're a duo. I don't know. But basically, it's like a 50-minute music video, but it is psychedelic as shit. Like, it's all the visual effects. The whole thing is basically green screened. The visual effects are like this weird, I don't know. You just have to look at the stills and you'll see what I mean. It kind of feels very like punk sci-fi, futuristic, and kind of dirty and messy, and there's just like shit everywhere. And the basic concept is that the AIs, this is what I read into it, and maybe I'm reading too much into it. The AIs that operate the spaceships are actually like either women or like this race of beings that are female but are like machines. I have no idea. It the whole thing is like a fucking mess. The music is like pounding for 50 minutes. It's on Shudder, and I think they've split it up into like 6 episodes that are about 12 minutes each, but actually run for 17 minutes because they put credits at the end of every episode, which is annoying as shit. But it's kind of cool. It's really kind of cool.
Cool.
And the visuals are amazing. I recommend it. It's not for everybody, but
I've written it down.
It's worth checking out. Buffaloed. With Zoe Dutch and Jay Courtney, and Judy Greer also stars. This is directed by Tanya Wexler, who did Hysteria a number of years ago. And it's Zoe Dutch plays this super keen young woman who is very smart and wants to make good and make money and can't really go to college. So she devises this scheme to make money quick, and it gets her in trouble. And when she comes out of prison, she starts collecting debts. And things just go from bad to worse. It's really good. Zoe Dutch is, as usual, super charming and really magnetic. And she really makes the movie. She's so great in almost everything she's in. So no surprise here. She kind of nails it. I really, really liked the film. I thought it was quite funny and has a great, good story and a good message. So worth checking out. That's Buffaloed. The Banker on Apple TV. This one is the Anthony Mackie and Samuel L. Jackson film. Mackie stars as Bernard Garrett and Samuel L. Jackson plays Joe Morris. These were two black men in the 50s who, like, they were businessmen who buy a building and then eventually buy a bank and start lending money to other black folk so that they can buy houses and better their businesses and better their lives, because the white bankers won't lend the black people any money. It's a really, really great story. I think it might be a bit of an untold story that a lot of people might not know about. It's a solid, solid film. The performances are great. Oh, and I guess I should mention that Nicholas Holt plays the front guy. So when they're meeting other white bankers, they need a white guy to do the dirty work. And so Nicholas Holt plays the guy that's sort of the fall guy. In the end, the government gets involved and things go sideways. But it's a really, really good story. And the film is pretty well made. And it's worth checking out. It's on Amazon Prime. And then second to last, The King of Staten Island. This is the new Judd Apatow with Pete Davidson, which is kind of semi-autobiographical. Pete Davidson kind of plays this burnout, who's living with his mom on Staten Island. He's like, you know, in his 20s, maybe his 30s. I have no idea. And it's just this really interesting story about this guy who is kind of lost and he's trying to find his way. And what Pete Davidson is pretty good in it, but then he's kind of playing a version of himself. So I don't know, but I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was pretty well made and really good performance. And we both really enjoyed it. And the last thing I want to mention is not new, but we recently rewatched Top Gun in glorious 4K and it was amazing. So I'll just say that it's amazing in 4K. It's probably one of the best presentations I've seen in a movie in a while. It sounds amazing. It looks amazing.
Yeah. So what scene was better, the flyby scenes or the volleyball scenes?
Flyby scenes. It's the volleyball.
No, what? The flyby scenes. The volleyball scene is so lame. I was never like it. It's, I've always laughed at it, but all of the aerial stuff. I mean, they've done such a great job with the remastering. The aerial stuff is just like stupid awesome. It's a really solid movie, but it's even better in 4K. So I just thought I'd mention it. And I have to thank Andrew James for posting about it, because I didn't even realize that they'd released it on 4K. And as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I'm so ordering this thing. We watched it as soon as it arrived. And then, of course, Dan this morning says to me, "You realize Days of Thunder is in 4K as well?" I'm like, well, that's happening. I have a problem, okay? I know. It's my weak point. I can't help myself.
That's okay.
And that's it. That's a lot of movies.
All right. Books? Books? Books?
Sure.
All right. I have one book. Following my... I bought a stack of Clive Cussler books.
Oh, yes. So
we're slowly working our way through. But mostly I'm just seeing how he writes himself into the next book. So The Tombs is the one I read. It's another one of the Sam and Remy Fargo adventures. And this time they were searching for the five treasure caches of Attila the Hun, and then leading up to Attila the Hun's actual gravesite. And of course, like badass collector mafiosas kind of thing from Hungary and France and Russia are all wanting in on it. And there's abducting of people, and then Sam being a Mary Jane himself kind of thing, single-handedly defeats an entire household full of armed guards and to kidnap his wife back. And as they're making their escape, they get a ride from an American who just happens to be driving through Siberia in a 1948 Tucker. And who is that? Clive Cussler.
Of course.
So far, I've read about five of his books, and in every single one so far, he has literally saved the day for his characters at some point. But of all the things, a Tucker, there were only 50 ever made. They were only produced in 1948. And this guy has one, and he's driving through Siberia in his Tucker.
I don't even know what that is, so you know I'm going to have to go look it up.
Tucker, it was a super futuristic, like at the time, every leading edge technology was put into the car. It had three headlights. The center one, I believe, actually turned in the direction that you were traveling, so it would actually illuminate your path rather than like a, as you're, it's hard to explain. It had safety belts. This is 1948. It had basically safety belts in the entire car. Like it was fully loaded with every conceivable future thinking sort of like technology. And it lasted an exact total of 1 year. In fact, I think Spielberg directed a movie called Tucker.
Yeah. And I was about to mention that. Tucker, the man and his dream.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was actually an okay film.
Actually, it was Francis Ford Coppola.
Was it Coppola? Okay.
Yeah.
Then it
with Jeff Bridges.
It might be Spielberg then who collects the Tuckers. Because I know he got in like a bit of Spielberg owns almost every single Tucker that's left, with the exception of one that came up to auction, and he was too busy to be there directly with for the auction because he was filming something, and he gave his agent an insanely high number, going, "I don't care, I want it. You can bid up to this," like thinking this is like five times more than the most expensive one ever gone. Like, so his agent had just shit tons of money to spend on this. But unfortunately for Spielberg, Jay Leno was sitting in the audience.
Oh.
And he just kept on bidding and bidding. "I want a Tucker. Just, I have nothing but money. I want the Tucker." And so the agent is desperately trying to get a hold of Spielberg as the limit is getting closer and closer, could not get through to Spielberg. So the auction went to Jay Leno, and apparently they've basically not spoken since.
Wow.
But yeah, of all the places to be driving, one of the rarest, most unique vehicles on the planet, Siberia. Damn you, Clive Cussler. I kind of hate you and admire you at the exact same time.
I love it.
And that's it for my books. I'm halfway through another one, but that'll be for another story.
I have finished no books.
I have finished no books as well.
Yay.
All right. I have two YouTube things.
Is that sure, it? Go for it.
All right. First is... I've subscribed to the channel. I believe it's IZN Bonsai. It's this guy called, I think it's Bjorn Bjornsson.
Of who, course.
From the age of 13, wanted to be do bonsai. So he started doing bonsai. He ended up getting an apprenticeship in Japan, spent 6 years in Japan, and became like one of the first or the first sort of like authorized through Japan master sort of bonsai people. And then like moved back here. He has his own, or back to the States, and has his own like bonsai nursery. And he has his own podcast network, his own like video production for, it's pretty involved. And
all about bonsais?
All about bonsai. It doesn't hurt from my perspective that he's tall, he's blonde, he's good looking, and he's talking about bonsai. So it sort of works on multiple levels for me. Not that I've given up on Crazy Peter Chan from the UK, which I also adore, and completely different reasons. It's good if you like bonsai. I'd recommend that channel. And the other, I've been basically watching over and over Childish Gambino videos. I just can't look away. He is so weird. That's it for YouTube for me.
I don't have any YouTube stuff. Dale, do you have anything that you want to?
Not, no YouTube. I have a podcast. I do.
Go for it.
Okay. I've talked about this before, but the series just ended and it feels really topical. It's the Scene on Radio series, The Land That Has Never Been Yet. And it's an exploration of American democracy from its beginning to the present day. And I especially enjoyed the beginning of the series, the history part. The whole series was interesting, but that was particularly interesting because I was hearing about aspects of history that I had never heard about before, like George Washington and friends for the Revolution really wanted to stay with Britain. But Britain wouldn't let them attack the Indians to get the land. So that was like, it was a bunch of rich kids that are like, fine, if you won't let us do it, we're going to take our marble bag and go. That's maybe a bit oversimplified, but mm-hmm. like I had never heard that before.
Yeah.
And it also had like it included a deep context of slavery in their democracy. Like a lot of stuff, I know they had to make compromises to the Constitution to get the Southern states in, but it explored that whole thing, and it brought it right up today. Like things like some of the signers of the Constitution didn't really believe in democracy. Like there's historical documents of them saying, "Yeah, you can't give the people too much democracy. It's like it's not a good thing." So I just like it kind of blew my mind. So I highly recommend this series that's just finished up, but it's available for repeat listening.
The land that has never yet been yet? What?
The land that has never been yet, okay. Which is a line from a poem and was like just an amazingly appropriate title. Like they wrote this document that really they couldn't live up to. Anyway, the overall series is Scene on Radio. So if you Google Scene on Radio, you should find it. Their other series are excellent too. One is called Men and the other is called Seeing White. Those are really good too.
Yeah, I really liked Seeing White. I listened to it after you'd recommended it, and I have the new season, I guess, on the docket to listen to. I just haven't had as much time to consume podcasts as I would like, so I've been a bit slow in getting through my stuff, but it's definitely on my to listen. So I'm really glad to hear that it's as good as Scene on Radio, as their Seeing White, because I thought that was a really fantastic series too.
Yeah, I can't recommend them highly enough.
I also have a podcast that's newish that I've been listening to. I'm pretty sure that the episodes are just coming out now. I've listened to the first few. It's called The Missionary. It's produced by iHeartRadio. It's like a deep dive investigative look at Rene Bock, who's a young missionary who went to Uganda at like 19 because, you know, she felt a calling. And apparently this area of Uganda called Jinja, the city that she goes to, is kind of like a hotspot for missionaries. It sounds like it's a business there. It's the craziest thing. But it's really, really kind of fascinating because it's a deep dive into this thing that you kind of hear about, but I'd never really like paid much attention to. And kind of the drama that's unfolding still around her and her mission. So it's a really, really interesting, really, really interesting show. And it's being reported by three different journalists working together, one on the ground in Uganda and two, I think, in the States, sort of looking at talking to the various different people and the various angles that are involved. And it's really fascinating. I recommend it. It's called The Missionary. And that's it.
I have two. To go with the YouTube sort of like a thing with the ICN Bonsai, IZN Bonsai. He also has a Bonsai Network podcast where you can listen to them discussing all sorts of attributes to bonsai. I am obsessed. And the other one is, although I'm not, I've given Candyland numerous attempts, and it's good, but for some reason it just doesn't sort of resonate with me all that much. I did listen to a episode recently. It was called Two Centuries of Blackface in Canada that I thought was exceptionally good and interesting, and I recommend that particular episode.
Oh, that's it for podcasts. That's it. I have nothing else to add.
Good. It's all good. Everything's good.
I feel like I've over-talked this episode. Sorry.
I feel like I need another nap. That's all I've done this entire weekend is nap.
And napping is good.
Yeah, and the weather's been good for napping for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's with the weather? I was at work and we're all discussing plan of attack on something. I'm like going, guys, we can all see our own breasts inside a building that has the windows on and the roof in place.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy. This is June.
Yes.
Not like March. Why are we seeing our breath?
Yeah. So, it's been pretty crazy.
Yeah. My plants look forward to actual having sun at some point in their existence.
Well, guys, anything else to add before we wrap it up for this week's show?
I'm good.
I think I'm good too.
The excitement. Yeah, it's the weather, man. It's the weather. I know, it's palpable. You can totally feel it. Yeah. But come on by atcpod.ca. We'll link to all of the things we talked about today. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with maybe a little bit more energy to talk about more of the stuff that we've been consuming. So until next time.
We'll see you after the credits.
Nice. Opening and closing credits are Arcadia by composer Kevin MacLeod, used under a Creative Commons license. For more information, visit incompetech.com.